I am aware that because this is really the opening Sunday of the school year, I'm aware that there are many of you who have just left your parents to come to the university. I'm aware that there are some of you who this may be your only visit to the chapel. And therefore, it makes all the more difficult that for my money, today's assigned gospel lesson is one of the toughest texts from Jesus, particularly in the Gospel of Luke. And I want you to know that I didn't select this text. It selected me. We go by the ecumenical lectionary of scripture reading. Well, anyway, enough defensiveness. Here is the gospel. Now, large crowds were traveling after Jesus. He turned and said to the crowds, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even hate life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he's able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000. If he cannot, then while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." This is the word of the Lord. He walked into this course in introductory physics, but he was surprised when the professor said, "For the next class, I want you to read the entire first chapter. We'll have a quiz on it. You have a 3-hour lab every Wednesday." And he said, I thought physics was common sense. Everything that goes up comes down." He went out for football. He said to the coach, "I want to earn a block letter. I want to do well in football." The coach said, "Fine, you'll have to shed those 30 extra pounds. You'll have to be in the weight room at dawn every morning. You'll have to be on the field till night every afternoon." "But I thought football was supposed to be fun," he said. Those of you who are parents, I think, will agree with me when I say that one of the toughest tasks of a parent is to teach children that for everything important in life, there is a cost. There is a price to pay. The other day in the post office, I saw a sign. It said, "If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is." And you think of all those dear souls who have been victimized through the mail of thinking that they could get something worth having for nothing. Now, in today's gospel, great crowds are following Jesus. Luke has admitted there's been opposition to Jesus, but now here in the middle of Luke's gospel, Jesus is becoming a success. He is becoming popular. Great crowds are following Jesus. It's a setup. At that time, Luke said, at that time, right at the time when this thing really gets rolling and Jesus becomes a success, Jesus seems to say, "Crowds? I can do something about those crowds. Don't expand the parking lot yet till I get through with this sermon." At that time, he says to them, "I want you to count the cost of following me." No king would go out to war. Interestingly, he uses this metaphor of war, warfare. No king would go to war if he first didn't sit down and consider if he's got enough armament to win the battle. Otherwise, he'll have to get down on his knees and beg his enemy for peace before the thing gets started. Or a building contractor. Better not start building a tower till you see if you got enough brick to finish the job. Otherwise, you'll have to leave off without finishing and you'll look like a fool in front of your neighbors. Oh, and just one more thing. I want you to give everything you've got away to the poor. Oh, yes. And take up your cross and follow me. Though our manuscripts do not show it, I'm sure that in the original Greek, the next verse was, and the crowds got a lot smaller after this sermon. I think this is a particularly difficult word for today's church. Among some advocates of the church growth movement, we are told that we preachers need to create what they call user-friendly churches. That is, churches where any fool can walk in off the street and get it in 5 minutes. Without effort, without study, without struggle, without change. In the user-friendly church, all the hymns ought to be as singable and as immediate as advertising jingles. All concepts and sermons ought to be immediately comprehensible, readily available to anybody regardless of your score on the SAT, everything without cost, without price. Well, doesn't the church believe in amazing grace, as we say? Aren't churches supposed to be accessible and inclusive? Don't we sing, I come to God just as I am? And user-friendly churches do seem to grow. They do seem to have big parking lots. But isn't it interesting in today's gospel, these great crowds, which we interpret as a sign of validation. You know, they must be doing something right. Look at the numbers. Jesus sees as a problem to be addressed. His sermon to the crowd sounds like an assault, a means to ensure that the crowd will be a good deal smaller by next week. To these crowds, Jesus says, I want to lay my cards on the table. Following me is swimming against the stream. It is not what 9 out of 10 Americans think is a good idea. I want to be up front. I want you to count the cost. Can you really afford to be a disciple? In my last church, the Christian Education Committee decided that it was high time that we stopped just baptizing anybody with a minimum amount of instruction, and we passed a resolution that we weren't going to baptize anybody else at Northside Methodist Church until we had spent some time with that person just trying to explain some of the essentials of what they were getting into in the Christian faith. If we were baptizing a baby, we were going to spend some time with the parents trying to explain the responsibilities of discipleship. We realized no longer could we assume like people knew what Christian meant by just being born in Greenville. When this was presented to the administrative board, a number of board members were shocked. They said, wait a minute, people are accustomed to just calling up the church and saying, we want to get the baby done next Sunday. When do we bring the baby down to be done? You're going to offend people. And it seemed as if people were backing off until I remember a woman stood up and said, have any of you tried to have a baby in this town lately? You go to the obstetrician says, okay, I'll deliver your baby, but I require that all of my patients go to 6 weeks of required Lamaze classes. If you miss the classes, you got to make them up. And if you don't make them up, I won't deliver your baby. And then she said, now why does that doctor require that? Because that obstetrician believes in what she is doing. And we don't. The administrative board passed the rule. We would perform no baptisms until we were sure that we had expended some effort in helping people in some way to begin to comprehend the cost of discipleship. But that's not really my story. The thing that surprised me was I fully expected young couples, when they heard about our requirements, to be angry. But in 3 years of administering that policy, I never heard of one couple who refused to go through the instruction. Instead, I found young parents who were grateful that we were taking them and their commitment with enough seriousness to attempt to prepare them for it. Moreover, we were taking ourselves seriously. Which leads me to a new insight from today's gospel. I tell you, not only is there a cost to everything which is worth having, including discipleship, I'm saying not only that you ought to count the cost and consider the price, but here's my insight. The amazing thing about you is that many of you are eager to pay the cost. We make a big mistake making it too easy. I think you're looking for something to give your life to. Maybe that's one reason why you're here this morning. You're willing, even eager, for something so large and so demanding of you that there's a high cost. One of my previous congregations, a woman came to me and said, look, you've spent years learning how to interpret the Bible. I want you to do a Bible study, and I want you to teach it, and I want you to tell us what you know. And I don't want you to hold anything back either. I don't want this to be one of these Bible studies like we usually have around here, where we all get together and we eat for 45 minutes, and then for 15 minutes we pool our ignorance and then have a prayer and go home. I want a Bible study that'll really get us into the Bible, and I want you to do it. And I said, well, okay, we could do it. I think we can do it in the living room of the parsonage. And so we announced a time and a place, and we put in the bulletin, we're going to have this Bible study, and there are going to be homework assignments, and things are going to be expected. At Wednesday night, the Bible study didn't meet in the living room of the parsonage because 28 people showed up for the Bible study. To my surprise, there were people there who knew that my life is complicated. And if something is going to speak to my life with any kind of importance, it's going to have to be big and thick and deep. It's going to take some time. I came to the conclusion in that experience and others that the church makes a big mistake. Too often we pitch everything to the lowest common denominator. We put everything down on the bottom shelf. And maybe that suits a majority. Maybe that's good enough for most of the crowds. But there are some people. And maybe some of those people are part of the minority that gather here today, for whom life is so confusing and the questions are so big that you know in your heart of hearts that if there's anything that'll speak to you, it won't come cheap. It won't be three easy steps offered free without cost, $25 and a weekend. It won't be some simple slogan you can put on a bumper sticker. It'll be expensive. It'll be something which will demand of you. It'll be something you'll have to give to It'll be something in which you will be expected to change in order to get better. There's a cost to everything important, and woe be unto me if I make Christian discipleship something trivial and unimportant and easy. Because your life isn't that way. And the cross of Christ isn't that way either. I don't know why Jesus tells you to hate your mother. I like my mother, and I'm sure you do as well. I don't know why he tells us to love him more than we love life itself. I do know what he means by, like, giving all you've got to the poor, and there the problem is not understanding it, it's just not liking it. But maybe one thing I've learned in living with you and meditating on this passage is not only is there a cost of discipleship, but you are eager to pay. And that's amazing. A couple of years ago, here we had a recruiter from the Teach America program. You know Teach America, it takes some of our best graduates and places them in some of the toughest teaching situations in the inner city, in some of the most difficult neighborhoods in America. Well, anyway, this recruiter came to campus, and I thought I would go to see what was going on, and I went there, and there were like 200 students packed in the auditorium to hear this recruiter from Teach America. This woman comes out, she's got a stack of brochures in her hand, and she said, "Well, I gather that a lot of you didn't understand what the program was to be tonight, but I'm from Teach America. And I know Duke. Duke is a place where everybody's here and you're on your way up and you're going on to responsible, well-paying positions and important jobs, and I'm here for Teach America, and that means I'm trying to talk somebody into coming forward and wasting two or three of the best years of your lives in teaching in some really tough inner city situation, to live at the poverty level, and to work with some of the most abused children this country has. We lost two of our teachers last year in Teach America. And I can tell by looking at you that a lot of you may be interested in, like, teaching, but I doubt any of you are interested in that. And I can tell by looking at you that all of you are successful and you're going on to better things in life. But if any of you just happen to be interested, I got these brochures down here, and I'll put them down here. And if any of you want to come up afterwards, I don't want to waste any more of your time. And if you want to pick up on the brochures, you can come down here and get one. And thank you for coming. And with that, everybody jumped up and started crowding the aisles and pushing each other and running down to the front, and they were fighting over those brochures. And I sat there thinking, the woman is good at what she does. She is good. I guess she's been around a 21-year-old before. And I wondered that night, I mean, when am I going to get it through my head? Your goal may not be just to find the wide path, the flat, the simple, easy way, but maybe you're interested in the narrow way. You have lots of hungers and you have lots of needs in your life, but one of the hungers and needs you have is for your life to count. One of the needs we desperately have in this culture is to give yourself to something bigger than yourself. It's a fact not only that everything important costs something, but it's an amazing fact that God has created you as the sort of person willing, even eager, to pay the price. And so I ask, do you think these words from Luke, these tough words of Jesus on a bad day, Are these for you bad news of impossible demand? Or are they good news of invitation to adventure? These are tough words. But maybe in your life and mine, these tough words are good news. Jesus comes demanding of us to walk a narrow way. And in our better moments, I think we may be just dying to pay the cost. Maybe just dying.